Hello guys, and welcome to the Weird Wiltshire Podcast, with me, Will Shire. So it's the first episode for quite a while. For those of you who don't follow my social media pages, firstly, you should, because I am pretty active on them. The reason there hasn't been an episode for a while is because my family and I were victims of a burglary. Obviously this has shaken us up good and proper, and we just needed time to process everything and start to feel safe in our own home again. I can't say too much more on it at the moment, due to stuff going on with the case, but I just want to thank everyone who has offered their support. It really means a lot to me. Also, I just want to thank Wiltshire Police for everything they have done for me throughout our ordeal. I'm not back yet. I just felt in the mood to put out an episode. I know this goes against one of the golden rules of podcasting, that being consistency is key. But rules were made to be broken, right? So, I'll stop blabbering on now and we will get to the good stuff. Our story takes place in Fisherton, Salisbury, at a house at 40 Meadow Street. This is where Flora Haskell and her son Edwin, who was referred to as Teddy, and so that's how I will refer to him going forward, lived. Flora was a widow, and Teddy was a cheerful, spirited lad who had unfortunately lost a leg from just above the knee to TB in 1902. But he didn't let that drag him down. He would be out and about on his crutches and would even play football in goal using them. On October 31st, 1908, at 10:30 p.m, Percy Noble, which was Flora's nephew, arrived at Flora's back door and knocked three times with his knee. He had borrowed a shilling from her that day and was dropping by to return it. Whilst he was waiting for the door to be answered, he could see there was a light on in the kitchen, and he heard a chair being moved, followed by a thumping noise similar to someone jumping down the stairs, but did not hear any noises from the front door. Flora screamed from within the house. Then she flung open the door with blood stains on her clothing and shouted to him, "Go and see if you can see that man. He has killed my poor Teddy. Go and fetch the doctor." Percy looked up and down the road but did not find a man. But he did fetch the doctor and was also able to find a police sergeant. A neighbour had heard the commotion and went into the house. As he got to the stairs, he noticed a bloody knife lying on the floor. He ran upstairs to Teddy's room. When he opened the door, he saw Teddy in his bed looking peaceful, almost as if he had just been tucked in. The neighbour noted that the room was tidy and there was nothing to indicate that anything was out of place or had been interfered with. However, Teddy was dead. The boy had suffered a terrible death. He had had his throat slit, which extended deeply on the right side of his throat, severing the larger artery in his neck. His larynx had also been severed, which would have prevented him from crying out after it had been inflicted. Death would have occurred rapidly from blood loss. He also had a wound on the back of his fourth finger on his left hand. Teddy had been saving over the previous 2 years to buy an artificial leg. 7 sovereigns, 2 half-sovereigns, and a 2-shilling piece had been kept wrapped in a tablecloth in a locked drawer. But when a police officer checked, they found that 4 sovereigns, 1 half-crown, and the 2-shilling piece had been taken. When asked to explain what had happened, Flora explained that she had put Teddy to bed at about 9:30 p.m. and went to sit in the kitchen. Shortly after this, she heard a noise. Assuming it was a visitor, she went to the front door, but nobody was there. Suddenly, from behind her, a strange man came running down the stairs, shoved her aside, before throwing a bloody knife at her before disappearing into the night. Flora was only able to give a partial description of this strange man, and after inquiring with neighbours, police found that nobody else had seen him, which instantly made Flora the number one suspect in Teddy's murder. The bloodied knife belonged to Flora. She told police that it had been missing since Teddy had sharpened it on a whetstone the previous week, and that he had used it to make a tip cat, which was a wooden toy of the era. The more the police went over the details of the case, the more they suspected that Flora had committed this brutal act of murder. So this seems like a perfect time to take a break. Assuming you like weird stuff because you're listening to my show, you should check this podcast out too.
Go.
Were you traumatized as a child by watching Unsolved Mysteries?
Do you like to judge facial hair?
Guess what?
We have a podcast for you.
Can you believe it? It's called Perhaps It's You, and it is an unofficial Unsolved Mysteries rewatch podcast.
We're your hosts. I'm Samantha.
I'm Liz. We're two cool mystery aunts, not really, who watch an episode of Unsolved Mysteries each week.
And tell you about it.
We update you if any of the mysteries have been solved.
We rate the episode on a scale of Robert Stacks. We can give episodes a possible 5 out of 5 Robert Stacks, although it rarely happens.
Very rarely. We also complain about what everyone is wearing, and it doesn't really matter if you know anything about Unsolved Mysteries or not. You should tune in because it's the number one podcast on iTunes.
Yeah, you can find us on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, most podcast platforms. You can also check out our website, perhapsitsyou.com, or find us on the social medias at Perhaps It's You.
Yep. And
get out there and solve some mysteries, bitches!
Yeah!
The police sent for Chief Inspector Walter Dew from Scotland Yard. Dew was a seasoned inspector who had been involved in the Jack the Ripper investigations and had recently arrested Dr. Crippen. This was a big case at the time and was comprehensively reported in the newspapers. The essential elements of a lone woman in a state of obvious distress, accused over the death of her crippled boy, tugged at the heartstrings of the nation. Flora was held in police custody until her trial. During this time, a reverend had been to see Flora, where she told him, "If I did it, I do not remember it." On November 30th, the reverend visited again, and told her it was a serious situation and meant either life or death for her. Teddy was the last boy in the world who they thought anything would ever happen to, as he was loved by everyone and would be missed by the boys at school. And whatever there is between you and God, you must tell God, and he will put everything right. He then prayed with Flora and left. 2 days later, after Flora had been committed for trial, the Reverend visited again. As he left her, she said to him, "Don't forget to thank him for his kindness and all kind friends for what has been done for us." A policeman then walked down the cell passage with the Reverend, and as he let the Reverend out, the Reverend said to him, "She is so grateful to you all for your kindness, and she says herself, the evidence is strong against her, and if she did, she doesn't remember it." The Reverend then asks the policeman, "Do you think a woman in her right senses would do such a thing?" The policeman replied, "I, as a police officer, dare not say." When the Reverend had left, the policeman relayed this to the inspector. The inspector decided it was near as good as confessing, and so they went to tell the chief constable. The policeman did not make any note of the conversation, nor did anyone else hear it. The next day, Flora was driven to Devizes for her trial. On the journey there, Flora was escorted by a police matron who claimed that Flora said, "If I did it, I did not know it." Reporters at her trial described Flora as a careworn, listless, frail woman who hardly seemed to realise her position. The prosecution argued that Flora killed her son out of a misplaced sense of mercy, an act of euthanasia in order to spare Teddy from the hard life of a cripple, and was one of those extraordinary, abnormal conditions which overtake human beings sometimes. Obviously, this theory was undermined by the fact that Teddy didn't appear to let his disability get in the way of his life, and seemed to be as happy as any other young boy. Flora had also never expressed a concern about his quality of life. One of Flora's friends was quoted as saying, "Everything a mother ought to be, she was." Flora's defence still maintained the argument that Teddy had been murdered by a burglar. Though they could not explain why a burglar would kill a defenceless child, but not the mother who had caught him at the bottom of the stairs whilst he fled. The prosecution's strongest evidence was the clothing Flora had worn that night. The blood-stained clothes that her cousin had mentioned. Experts had testified that the bloodstain showed no splash, as would be expected if a bloody knife had been thrown at her. Evidence from the crime scene showed that blood found in the kitchen was consistent with the knife being laid down, not dropped or thrown. They also pointed out that according to Flora's story and the statement from her cousin, showed that Flora did not go upstairs after her encounter with the burglar, yet she instantly knew that Teddy was dead. The jury was left with a hard job. On the one hand, it seemed absurd to think that a hard-working, decent woman such as Flora could be responsible for carrying out this brutal act on her own child. Yet, on the other hand, the evidence was there to suggest that she did exactly that. At the end of deliberation, the jury was deadlocked. This meant that Flora would face a retrial. At the second trial, however, the jury came back with a verdict of not guilty. So, if Flora didn't kill Teddy, then who did? Flora was subsequently released, and she moved to London where she died in 1920 of tuberculosis, the same disease that had robbed Teddy of his leg. No other suspects were ever identified, and it remains unsolved to this day. Among my research, however, I did find one thing that shocked me. Flora is listed as the murderer on the official record of Teddy's death. This is due to the fact that at the time, the coroner had the power to name a murderer on official records. So, despite two trials and a not guilty verdict, Flora was still, and still is, marked as a murderer. This power remained with coroners right up until it was removed by the Criminal Law Act of 1977, and interestingly, the last person to be named a murderer by a coroner was Lord Lucan in 1974. In 2016, the Fisherton History Society launched a campaign to change Teddy's death certificate and remove Flora as the named murderer. They were looking at taking it all the way to the High Court. As of today, however, this doesn't appear to have been changed. So, do you think Flora was guilty? Or do you think she was innocent? As always, you can let me know your thoughts on my social media links in the show notes, or you can email me at weirdwiltshirepodcast@gmail.com. So, in the last episode, I introduced a new segment in which I try and make you laugh with a joke, and if I do make you laugh, you have to leave me a review on any platform. Well, I've got a really good one for you today. Today, my son asked, "Can I have a bookmark?" And I burst into tears. 11 years old, and he still doesn't know my name is Will. So, if I made you laugh, be a dear and leave me a review. I do like dad jokes. You can even submit them to me too if you really wanted to. Next, we move on to listener submissions. This week, we have two anonymous submissions. Here is the first one. My daughter is now 20. But before she started school, she talked about a few strange things. at her old house when she was about 3 or 4. She said she had another family and talked about grandma. We don't use grandma, it's nanny in our house. She also mentioned the Ferdy man, who had dogs and used to walk through the walls to see her. She also said she talked to him on her phone, which was a toy phone, and asked her nan, who was with me as she was explaining this, if she could talk to him on her phone. Nan gave over her mobile phone, and my daughter became distressed as he wouldn't answer her on the mobile phone. When we moved house, she would talk about her wind. She said we couldn't see it, but, and she looked up towards the ceiling light, she could, and that it was right there circling the light. She said that sometimes it did things like move stuff around and knock things over, but we thought it was her. She also once called out to me, quite upset, saying, "Mummy, someone is calling me, but there is no one there." I asked her what they were saying, and she said, "It's saying to come here, Lola." I don't know how I didn't burn down the house at that point. Yes, I agree. Anyway, it all stopped when she started school, and she can't remember any of it. That's story number one from me anyway. I have my own experiences which I'll write up when I have time, or I can audio them across because I'm lazy. Well, we're all lazy at some point. I'm lazy quite often. Thank you for your submission. It's made all the more creepy by the fact that it involves a child being spoken to by an unseen entity, and this really creeped me out. This person has also submitted some videos of orbs that have been captured in her daughter's bedroom. You can see them on my social media pages, so please make sure you go and check them out. Keeping with the theme of children, this next one terrified me. When my wife and I were living in our first home together, we had an encounter one night that really freaked us out. We lived in this flat for around 2 years, but there was always something off about the place. These flats were built right after World War II, and so they were pretty old. I often felt like I was being watched, and I could hear noises, but there were 13 or 14 other flats in the block. So I just put it down to one of our many neighbours. So one night, when our first child was about 18 months old, my wife and I were in bed, making the most of our son actually sleeping by, yes, you guessed it, getting some extra sleep in before he inevitably woke up again. By this point, my son was in his own bedroom, and so we had baby monitors set up, one in his room, and the receiver in our bedroom. Just as I was drifting off whilst listening to some music on my headphones, I was jolted out of my slumberous state by my wife's hand gripped firmly around up my forearm. I removed my headphones and whispered, "What's wrong?" "Listen to the baby monitor," she replied, also in a whisper. Fear washed over me as I led there in the dark, listening intently to the baby monitor. After a few seconds, I heard it. It was very faint, but I definitely heard it. Just above the crackling white noise coming through the monitor, I could hear a voice. I could not hear what it was saying, and it was a very breathy voice. Scared out of our minds, we jumped up and switched on the light and went into our son's room. Nobody but my 18-month-old sleeping peacefully in his crib was in that room. I've thought about this a few times over the last 10 years or so, and I have thought about a rational explanation for it. Maybe it was noise from a neighbour being picked up by the monitor. But then again, due to the design of the flat, the only room attached to this room was our living room. Again, with nobody in it. Maybe it was noise from outside. But no. This was in mid-October or early November, and as he was young, we had the windows closed. and even that wouldn't explain the breathy part of the voice we heard. This was like someone or something was right on top of the monitor. That was the only time we experienced that in that flat. And we moved out the following year. But the story doesn't end there. See, when my son was about 4 or 5, he told us one morning about the woman in blue. All about how he had woken up a few nights and she was watching him whilst he slept. We asked him if the woman in blue spoke to him, but he told us that she hadn't. I firmly believe that the woman in blue was who we heard over the baby monitor that night. He hasn't mentioned her since that time, but I did some research and I'm pretty sure that this is a spirit of an old nurse. Why she chose to visit my son, I do not know. I can only hope that she had good intentions and was watching over him to protect him. Well, that wraps up this episode. Thank you for listening, folks, and I will hopefully be back to my usual schedule soon. This has been the Weird Wiltshire Podcast, and I have been Will Shire. Until next time. This episode was written and produced by me, Will Shire. All content used is done so under fair use or Creative Commons. Music allowed for use and created by the magical Coag Music.